going to open a window. Oh, that's a good point. Go Blazers, yes. I'm still recovering from the game a couple nights ago. That quadruple overtime was put a lot of tension on my body. It took me a long time to go back to sleep, or to actually go to sleep. Oh, man, they're playing today at 4. Actually, Amy and I and whoever is going to be down at Max if you want to join and watch the game. Okay, I was going to open a window, but I'm worried that it's too chilly outside. Do we feel like it's too chilly? Would be okay with one? Would be okay with just one singular window being open? Would that be okay with everybody?
Warm enough.
Yeah, that didn't feel chilly at all.
Turn the heat
off. All right. I wanted to open that window because we're talking about the environment, right? And we live in such a way that we're closed off from the outdoors a lot of the time. We have air conditioning, we have heat, and we kind of need those things, right, to live here in a lot of ways. Although there were people before us who didn't have those things and they lived here. So this is just a symbolic, you know, we're part of the out there, right? Last week, we didn't really have a sermon. We just had a discussion. I asked a couple questions, one of which was, what do you hope for this community? And I wrote down some of the responses, which I'm glad I did, and I want to share those with you. One person said they hoped that we'd be known for our love, and another person said that we would experience great love. I think Greg Sheasley said he hoped that we would listen to each other with the patience of a mother with her little kid. Mom. Someone else said that they hoped that we would foster expressions of honest faith through creativity and imaginative dreaming. Amy hopes for a church bowling party, which is a great idea. Vicky hopes for an expression in our community of some sort of public art that acknowledges both indigenous people that were here before us and migrant workers who have come through and worked in the fields. I wanted to recap those things because I think sometimes our shared hopes can bolster our individual hopes, right? Kind of like, oh, if Lori has a hope and I'm feeling a little hopeless, well, it might do me good to hear that Lori has hope for this place or has hope for me or has hope for us, right? So it's a question we should ask each other fairly often. What are you hoping for? So as I said, we're starting a series on the church and the natural world. Before we begin, I need to make one important point. Yes, the Bible does say, don't love the world. No, that does not mean the planet, right? When it says don't love the world, it's talking about systems of oppression and systems of competition. It's talking about maybe some politics, talking about economies, anything that puts some people up and puts other people down, right? Don't love that. And if so Paul says our fight is not against flesh and blood, right? It's against these other things, these other systems, these other powers. And if you want my just nutshell argument for this, is Jesus says to love our neighbors as ourselves, and I don't love my neighbor up here fully, and I don't love my neighbor in here fully. I can only love my neighbor out here, right? I was sitting next to a lady last night at an event that was beautiful. It's actually, it's this thing called the Jewish Project, and I think it's going to be coming here in the fall. It's three courses of like ice cream dessert mixed with three stories about this guy's experience of being Jewish. And I will talk more about that when it comes up, but it's incredible, and the dessert was awesome. But I was sitting next to this lady, and she was sharing about how her neighbor is an organic gardener, and his back lawn and his front lawn are just gardens. And he's an engineer, so everything's perfectly laid out. And she said, so when they first moved in, he brought over some vegetables. And then she was making cookies, so she brought him some cookies. And then the vegetables came back. And then she made some bread. And so they've got a trade going between these two neighbors, right? How do they love each other? Just with what they have, right? Plants coming out of the ground. Bread made in the oven. We love our neighbors in real ways, right? We love our neighbors on the planet. So next week, Emily is going to speak. And the week after that, Kathy's going to speak, which will be a treat. And the week after that, I want us to think of as kind of a show and tell. So I want you to spend the month of May paying attention in your life. What's beautiful, right? What's growing around you? What's remarkable to you? Where are you seeing God in creation? And we'll have a show and tell the last Sunday of the month. So we're talking about the church in creation, or the church in the environment, or the natural world, or the universe, the church in our earth community is the way I like to say it. And I'm excited to talk about this because in roughly 29 years of going to church, I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about it in church, right? Now, people would cite Romans 1, verse 20, for ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky. Through everything God made, they can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, so they have no excuse for not knowing God. And they'd quote that, but nature as a way of encountering God was really for sentimental people. It was for sweet old ladies who liked to garden. It was for poets who died a long time ago, right? It wasn't for us. It wasn't a readily available source of connection with our maker, right? And in fact, the church culture that I grew up in was really suspicious of science. And when I was 23, I took some environmental biology courses at Chemeketa with Wynne Cudmore, who was a great professor, has a funny name. And I was so surprised when I learned that there was such things as like mass extinctions occurring and like frogs and that like salmon runs used to be way larger than they are now. When I learned about these things, I was so surprised that the church wasn't doing anything about it. I thought, well, if anybody is already organized and should be leading the charge to say, hey, let's care for the planet we live on, shouldn't it be the people who follow this guy who says, love your neighbor, love your enemy, who just models this gentle way of being in the world? And I decided that I really wanted to help with that, right? So if I'm going to be involved in church in any sort of capacity, I want to also be involved in drawing attention to the natural world and how precious it is. Now, the only time growing up that my church seemed to talk about science was when it was trying to refute the idea of evolution, right? Now, I don't care what you believe, okay? I was raised a young earth, six-day, literal creationist, right? So I know all that, and if that's what you believe, good. If you just see that as a creation myth, and you believe in evolution, but God did that, that's good too, okay? So, and if you want to have coffee, or you want to have a beer, or you want to have lunch about this, I welcome it, okay? I'm not trying to move anyone's opinion. I'm just trying to draw our attention to the natural world. So there was kind of this idea that they were taking the Bible literally when we'd look at Genesis. But I noticed as I grew up that we didn't take everything in the Bible literally, because Jesus says, love your enemies. And in my mind, I had plenty of those, right? Muslims, and because they're terrorists. Oh, okay. Homeless people, because they should be working. These sorts of things. And this is just within my own household, right? So I had to say, well, maybe we're not taking this totally seriously. And if we're going to take one part really seriously, it seems like that part, loving your enemy and, you know, loving your neighbor, should be taken pretty literally. But the Genesis creation story has, no matter how you look at it, has very important points, right? I'm going to mention two of them. It has God's divine authority. He says, let there be light, and there's light. And it is very comforting to know that if God says, let there be light, there's light, right? And it also has the inherent goodness of creation, because God makes everything and says, it's good, right? So the trees on the hillside, the deer eating your yard, the ants in your kitchen, the weeds in your yard, the mosquitoes, and your own body, whatever shape that takes, whatever pains you have, right? Whatever you're dissatisfied with, your own body is good. God made it. And, if you want proof of that, everything is held together by God, right? If it wasn't good, don't you think he'd just let go? Right? But he's holding all of this together. It's a good thing. So I've come to see the story of the universe as told or described by science and geology and evolutionary biology, not as an enemy of God's truth, but as a source of awe that should lead all of us and every person to worship. Let this go away. I think this cord's a little funky. You can still hear me though, right? All right. If someone's like, oh, I can't hear you, just speak up. It's the story of a patient artist loving his work, right? So there's something beautiful about the idea of make it and it's made, right? I love that show of power. Thank you. But I also love this idea that God likes what he makes and he doesn't rush. Because if God's not rushing on making the universe, he's not rushing on making me either, right? And he's got patience for me. And I also love the idea that there are whole species you and I have never seen, and no human has ever seen, because they went extinct before we existed. And that just means that God liked those things, right? Doesn't that mean that God liked dinosaurs or the creatures that came before them? I think that's a pretty good indicator. And we have an invitation to join in that appreciation and that rejoicing with what God has made, right? And to remember that God made us too, and God rejoices in us, in making us. So let's go to John chapter 1. We're going to read this creation story. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 14. It's going to say the word a lot. The word is Jesus, right? When we talk about getting into the word, sometimes people mean the Bible. We really just want to get into Jesus. And we encounter Jesus in the Bible. We encounter Jesus in here. And we encounter Jesus out there, right? In fact, if you're looking, he's everywhere. In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through him, and nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. God sent a man, John the Baptist, to tell about the light so that everyone might believe because of his testimony. John himself was not the light. He was simply a witness to tell about the light. The one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He came into the very world he created, but the world didn't recognize him. He came to his own people, and even they rejected him. But to all who believed him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. They are reborn, not with a physical birth resulting from human passion or plan, but a birth that comes from God. So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. So Christ in all of creation made known to us in a form that we can communicate with directly, right? God doesn't just leave it to trees and plants and bushes. He says, actually, I'm going to show up as one of you guys so I can be as clear as I possibly can be that I love you. If you're not getting it, I'm going to make sure that you understand. I'm going to become one of you so you know I'm on your side. I love you. God creates everything through him. He gives life to everything that was created, and his life brings light to everyone. What a beautiful creation story. And it's one that brings everyone together, right? Because the whole point of creation is that God does it. Whether it takes billions of years or whether it takes 6 days, the point is that God makes it, right? And that gives the universe meaning, right? There's a purpose. God's doing this. It's not a random thing. Now, I want to complement this creation story with Colossians chapter 1, verses 15 through 20. Christ is the visible image of the invisible God, God made known to us. He existed before anything was created and is supreme over all creation. For through him God created everything in the heavenly realms and on earth. He made the things we can see and the things we can't see, such as thrones, kingdoms, rulers, and authorities in the unseen world. Everything was created through him and for him. He existed before anything else, and he holds all creation together. Christ is also the head of the church, which is his body. He is the beginning, supreme over all who rise from the dead, so he is the first in everything. For God, in all his fullness, was pleased to live in Christ, and through him God reconciled everything to himself. He made peace with everything in heaven and on earth by means of Christ's blood on the cross. Actually, I'm going to read the next two verses because I think we're not really talking about them today, but they're big. This includes you, who were once far away from God. You were his enemies, separated from him by your evil thoughts and actions. Yet now he has reconciled you to himself through the death of Christ in his physical body. As a result, he has brought you into his own presence, and you are holy and blameless as you stand before him without a single fault. So you can chew on that one later. Now, the way we talk about the environment, the way we talk about the created world, puts us at the top, right? All this is for us. And the biblical model of relationship to the environment is one of stewardship, right? In Genesis 1, it says, hey, take care, be over all of these things. But what we've done is we've taken stewardship and twisted it to mean dominance, right? We can do whatever we want with this. It doesn't matter. We're better than everything else. When stewardship really means loving relationship. And I think that a good reminder of that is this verse where it says everything was created through him and for him, right? This world that we live in is not our world. It's God's world. And we're a part of it. How do we behave in that community, right? Okay, so Christ holds everything together. He's made peace with everything through his nonviolent and loving death and resurrection. Now, globally, as a species, we know more about the universe than any people ever have. We've accumulated a lot of knowledge, we have a lot of technology, and we know a lot, right? About microscopic stuff, about cosmic stuff, about relationships between ecosystems. But our culture, and in my generation especially, there are these intense feelings of meaninglessness, pointlessness. And so I think what should have led us into a deeper intimacy with our Creator, right, with the source of all love and all life, has instead been interpreted as a study of random occurrences and pointless interactions. And if the universe is an accident, well, I don't blame these people, right? I could see it feeling kind of absurd to, like, what's even the point of being alive? And largely, I actually hold our faith tradition accountable for this because we as a church have not delighted in what God has made. We haven't appreciated being in the garden of God. We haven't relished each new scientific discovery as another message from God disclosing himself to us, right? That's what it is, if we have eyes to see that. And by ignoring that, it's really hurt our inner lives. Right, we're disconnected from each other. We're disconnected from our own planet that we're meant to be in loving relationship with, jointly worshiping God. And now our society, more than any other, has damaged the work of God greatly. Right, and so we always see these news reports, climate change, all this stuff's coming. If we don't change things by this date, it's probably still too late, right? It's just depressing. It's been at the expense of our own health, and more than that, at the expense of our fellow creatures. So science warns us of these coming consequences, and it gets everybody feeling crummy. And what I want to say today is I believe that the body of Christ, the church, can can bring a better motivation than fear of extinction to this crisis, right? What does John, what does it say in 1 John, perfect love casts out fear, right? We're not people of fear, we're people of love. So I don't have to be afraid of the world ending because of climate change, right? I have another option. We can bring a love for our earth community that's rooted in the power of resurrection, right? When everything seems most dire, right? Jesus dies. He's dead. And it's like a horrible death. And everybody's given up. But then he's not dead anymore, right? And he comes back. We can bring a love that brings light that no darkness can overcome, as it said in John 1. So I invite us this month, Little Oak Street, to pay attention. God is speaking to us in the parks and in the roadside ditches. I love in the spring, all the ditches just have these great blooming trees. You notice that around here? They're everywhere. God's speaking to you in your potted plants and in the birds and in your dog. And may we who have eyes truly see and let our ears hear. This all kind of got started for me when I was looking at the story of the resurrection. When Mary's in the garden, she encounters Jesus, who's risen from the dead, and she doesn't recognize him. And who does she think he is? She thinks he's the gardener. And I always just thought that was just incidental. I don't think so. I don't think it's a mistake. I think it's an important lesson for us that Jesus is the gardener, right? And there's a parallel between that and the creation story where God's in the garden with us, right? And then here's this other garden and Jesus is there with us. Christ is sowing resurrection and redemption into the world, right? He's weaving it into our lives. Do we see it? We're people of hope and we're people of resurrection. I happened to put on, Stephen Colbert, his band leader, John Baptiste. I was listening to one of his albums yesterday as I was writing this, and he does a cover of What a Wonderful World. And it's just kind of a more mellow one and just a little drawn out. And I thought about just playing that during communion, but I just want to share this line. The bright blessed day and the dark sacred night. Right? God is speaking to us in the bright blessed day and the dark sacred night. What a wonderful world. So we're going to close with Psalm 65, verses 5 to 13, and then we're going to take communion. Communion, by the way, grain and grapes, right? Things that come out of the soil. You faithfully answer our prayers with awesome deeds, O God, our Savior. You are the hope of everyone on earth, even those who sail on distant seas. You formed the mountains by your power and armed yourself with mighty strength. You quieted the raging oceans with their pounding waves and silenced the shouting of the nations. Those who live at the ends of the earth stand in awe of your wonders. From where the sun rises to where it sets, you inspire shouts of joy. You take care of the earth and water it, making it rich and fertile. The river of God has plenty of water. It provides a bountiful harvest of grain, for you have ordered it so. You drench the plowed ground with rain, melting the clods and leveling the ridges. You soften the earth with showers and bless its abundant crops. You crown the year with a bountiful harvest. Even the hard pathways overflow with abundance. The grasslands of the wilderness become a lush pasture, and the hillsides blossom with joy. The meadows are clothed with flocks of sheep, and the valleys are carpeted with grain. They all shout and sing for joy. So I invite us for communion just to do it in silence. Sometimes it's nice to chat with your buddy, but just as you're coming up, if you don't mind, just go inside a little bit. Think about these things and ask God to draw your attention to what he's made that's around you, right? What's a special message for you? Because we each pay attention to different things. What you notice might be just especially for you to notice, right?